Today's episode is proud to recognize the Alabama Nurses Foundation. Their mission? Supporting nursing scholarships and improving Alabama's nursing school facilities. You can help by choosing the Nurses Save Lives Distinctive Alabama Automobile Tag. Your purchase funds scholarships for future nurses and upgrades to teaching facilities statewide. Learn more and make a difference at www.alabamanursesfoundation.org. Together, let's invest in the nurses who save lives every day. Welcome to Sir Thrival, the podcast about befriending grief. I'm your host, Stacia Gaines. I have back with me this great panel of expertise in caregiver caring, is for lack of a better word. I have with me, back from our last episode, Chris Blackerby, who is VP of Sales at Senior Placement. I have Janice Williams, who's Senior Services Coordinator for Jefferson County in Alabama, and Audrey Thorpe, who is a hospice nurse with Hospice Savannah. So, panel, welcome back. I so enjoyed our last conversation, and we're going to dive right in with some of the caregiver questions that they need to ask. So, in my introduction, I talked about when my dad was in the hospital in the ER, and I called my college friend, Chris Blackerby, and I said, "Dad's in the hospital. What do I do? Let me pick your brain." So, Chris, tell me what your response to that was, because I'm sure that my conversation was very typical with a lot of the conversations you have with people who've just learned they've got some decisions to make.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'll get a phone call from a family member, and they've been referred to me by someone that friend of a friend, usually. Sometimes I don't even know who they're like, "I don't know where I got your name from. They just said you're the guy I need to call." And so it usually involves a senior adult in crisis or a family in crisis. Mom's in the hospital. Dad's in the hospital. They fell at home. They broke a leg. They had multiple falls. They found them on the floor, you know, non-responsive. And so they're in the hospital, and the social workers come in and said, "Your mom or dad can't be at home alone." And they're like, "Wow. Okay, so we've gone from mom is perfectly independent, drives to the grocery store, she goes to church, she goes to her bridge club, she goes to get her hair done, she does all that on her own, while son or daughter, you know, has their daily life." And now the social workers come in and just kind of dump this in their lap and said, "Your whole world's about to change." Now, it's not what the social worker said, but that's what you hear.
Right.
So that's where I usually get the phone call, is that mom or dad, something has happened. And so my first question is, what's going on? You know, why are they in the hospital? What's happened? And so we try to dig into, is this a chronic thing? Is it a one-time thing? Has it been coming for a while and we've just pushed it aside in denial that mom's fine, everything's fine? Or is it truly a catastrophic event? Mom had a stroke or, you know, heart attack or whatever. Or they've gotten some type of a diagnosis that they weren't expecting. So my first question beyond what's going on is, what do you want to do? What do you think your mom wants to do or dad wants to do? Well, their answer is usually they want to go home. That's going to be their first answer. And I said, okay, well, let's talk through how we get you back home. What does that look like? And so we talk about rehab, going to rehab or getting stronger or home health, whatever that looks like for them, to get them back to as close to baseline as they were previously. And quite frankly, sometimes I have to tell them that's probably not going to happen. This is going to be your normal. And so I describe it as steps. You know, you go up a step, you come back a step, you go up three steps. And so while they do regain some of what they lost, they might not regain everything. And so what does that look like? And so, you know, the families will say, well, mom needs help with meals. She doesn't really like to cook anymore. She doesn't drive. Their world shrinks as they get older. Their world becomes smaller, so they don't do things they used to do socially. And that's not good for them to do that. We're social beings, so we were built, made to interact with other people. And so when I start discussing things that would make mom or dad happy, or in whatever time they have left, let's work on quality of life. And yes, I know they want to go back to their home where they've lived for 50 years, and that might be possible, but it might not. And sometimes, quite frankly, it's the son or daughter who is in denial that mom or dad needs to do something different. Mom or dad might be waiting for the opportunity for the son or daughter to say, hey, mom, if you would like to sell the house and move to a community where you can be around other people, that's okay. They're waiting for permission sometimes. And the son or daughter is like, but mom, we have Christmas over here every year. And we have this and we have that. And I've got all of my high school things stored in your basement. What are we going to do with those? You know? And so I have to remind them, it's not about you. It's about mom. What does mom want? And so we walk through that situation of, okay, what does the next step look like? So then I get into, what are their needs? Are they short-term needs? Is it long-term needs? So, you know, in your dad's case, we were looking at, you know, a short-term thing that actually became the only thing, but, right. But sometimes it's we're going to do rehab, we're going to get stronger, we're going to work on our balance, we're going to modify things at home, like Janice talked about earlier, bedside commode or grab bars, or, you know, no step showers, because most of their homes probably are not designed for that. They're not able to be remodeled without a lot of expense. And quite frankly, it's sometimes the house becomes a burden to them. They're surrounded by things, but they're not really happy. And so getting them to a place where, well, let's look at options. So we talk about independent living. We talk about assisted living. We talk about memory care needs, skilled nursing needs. And I kind of go through what the difference is between those with the families, because I can usually tell within the first couple of minutes if they're being honest with me, and that's a big if. But if they're being honest with me about what mom or dad's needs really are, I can usually tell them pretty quickly.
What level of care they need.
Yeah, this is what we're looking at. And then I can kind of give them a cost range based on where where they are, what part of town they're in. So I do a lot of education on, well, let's look at the needs. How can we best meet those needs? What are our finances? What do our finances look like? What's our budget look like? Mm-hmm. And then it kind of goes back into our previous conversation about making sure that we have documents in place so that son or daughter can help mom or dad make those decisions and take some of that stress off of them. Because if they're, you know, they're in their 90s and they're physically pretty good shape, but paying the bills and keeping up with paying the yard guy and, you know, what if a tree falls? And I actually had that happen in a family. A family member told me, she said, well, I'm not moving unless a tree falls on my house. And I said, okay. So 6 months later, on a beautiful spring day, not a cloud in the sky, a tree fell on her house. And she said, well, she called. She said, well, the Lord tells me it's time to move. And I said, okay, where do we go from there? And so it literally took a tree falling on her house to make that happen. But we hope it doesn't come to that. But usually it is something, everything's just clicking right along. And then all of a sudden we have a crisis. And then where do we go from there? So asking a lot of questions, getting into what their needs really are, and sometimes working with the caregiver to maybe step back a minute and let's really talk about what mom wants and not necessarily what son or daughter wants. And that's tricky sometimes. Yeah. Because you're
I'm assuming that family members are not always on the same page.
Absolutely not. That's a whole chapter in my book on family dynamics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One says they think that she should stay at home, and yeah. one says that she should be in a home, you know. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You've got to find out who the
decision maker
is, who the more the person that's going to have the most influence on it. Mm. And that can be tricky. But I'm there to kind of be an objective third party, because my only goal is to find the right fit for the client.
Right, right. The client being the patient.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
The person.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the person that all these decisions are being made about. Can you guys share with me, Janice, I'll start with you, like some of the things that you have seen that maybe from the patient's perspective, what you have noticed is, as Chris said, you know, I'm kind of the objective bystander here. What are some mistakes and things that maybe you have seen caregivers where they don't really take the patient's perspective into account? Can you share some of those?
Well, sometimes when it comes to adult children who might be caring for their parents, it just depends, because some adult children, if they haven't been the caregiver or haven't had to like just be there to start caregiving, they just happen to be there for this particular incident that may start the beginning of caregiving. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they tend to think about themselves more so, or how it's going to inconvenience their life. So they're not willing sometimes to sacrifice what it takes to be there for that person. So they're trying to make it convenient for them. Yeah. And a lot of times they don't do it. And then sometimes it's the mother or father who sometimes not looking at things realistically. They, you know, they're in this dream world about, I'm going to be able to go home and I'm going to do this, not thinking about all that it's going to take to sustain them in their home. Yeah. And so sometimes I had to actually do that with a client maybe a couple of weeks ago. And she's 90 years old and she wants to stay in her house. Her children's telling her, Mom, you need to get out of that house. She can't maintain the house anymore.
Right.
And she's on a walker and she's trying to maneuver, but She has, when I mean tons and tons of clutter, she has like a 5-6 bedroom house. She has clothes in every room of the house. She can't clean it. She can't, I mean, it's getting to the point, it's just too much for her. But she says, I'm too old to move. She's been patching on this house for the last 5 years. Right. And so I tell her, I said, you're not going to get it done. Okay, I said, you're 90 years old. Do you want to spend the rest of your life patching on this home instead of enjoying your latter years? She was like, no. I said, so you're too old to continue to doing this, patching on the house. And she's had people to come fix stuff, and it never gets fixed. It never gets finished. And she's even gotten scammed trying to get people to fix her home. So I've told like, so when I share with her, I said, wouldn't you like to be in a place that you have less to maintain? You don't have to worry about keeping the grass cut, getting the plumbing fixed, repairing the roof. And she was like, oh, I didn't think about it like that. And I said, and then you don't have to worry about all this space and all stuff that you can't do anything with. You don't have to keep fixing. I said, you, and she said, well, my son wants me to travel and come visit him in France, and I like to travel. I said, well, how are you going to do it? You spending all your money patching on the house. And so she was like, I didn't think of that. So that she was like, oh. So I said, are you willing to allow me to give you some listings of independent living places we can help? She was like, yeah, I want to do that. So I was like, God, I'm so relieved.
I think you're talking about something really important here in terms of the person. Sometimes it takes us a while to get there, doesn't it? Because it's hard for, you know, the person to give up driving.
Exactly.
I mean, you're giving up your independence.
That's
when
one
you
of
do
the
that.
Hardest.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we are going to try something new today, listeners. We are going to have Sir Thrival Theater, starring Audrey Thorpe and Janice Williams. So Janice is going to be the caregiver who comes into the home, and Audrey is going to be the caregiver who is given that daily care. And I think you'll find that there are, is that right?
You said the yes.
All right, so you're the external person, Janice, who's coming in, and Audrey is the person that is in the home taking care of that person on a daily basis. So we're going to kind of show some of the emotional, and Chris may chime in. He can be Audrey's brother, who he's kind of the one that kind of comes in occasionally, but he's not doing the lion's share, right? He's just kind of he pops by, and but Audrey's there all day, every day, taking care of. Are you taking care of your mom, Audrey?
Yes.
Okay.
Taking care of mom.
Okay. So this is Sir Thrival Theater. Take one. Janice, you're entering the house.
Hello, Audrey. How are you?
Hi, Janice.
It's so nice to meet you. You called and needed me to come out and to see what I could do to assist you. So I'm here to help in any way I can. Can you give me a little background of what's going on with you, your mom's condition, and what you need, what you think you need?
Oh, I need so much. Oh, Janice, I am so glad you came today. I am so overwhelmed. Okay, so mom had to come live with us. She has been living on her own. I only live 10 minutes away from her cute little house. Her Alzheimer's is suddenly taking a turn for the worse. I used to go in and check on her a couple times a day. My brother Chris would pop in and help when I couldn't. I was still working part-time. He didn't want to take her in, so I had to take her in. And I had to quit my job. And I am just overwhelmed. I mean, I don't know what to expect. My mother's personality is changing by the day. It's not who she was. I didn't think things were going to go down like this. I'm upset. I'm frustrated. Chris isn't really pulling his weight in this. I'm just overwhelmed. And now hospice is coming in and they've given me some medications that I can give her. I mean, I can't even pronounce these medications' names, and they're telling me when to give these to her, but I don't even know if I'm doing a good job. I mean, I'm losing my mother. I've lost my mother. Her personality has changed, and she doesn't even know who I am most of the time. So I'm grieving. My mother's going gone. I mean, I knew this was going to be a long goodbye. I didn't think it was going to go down like this. And now I feel like I'm getting dumped on, but I still have my family. I still have my children. I want to do things with them, but I can't even get out and go do what I want to during the day. I used to go meet my friend for coffee on my days off. I can't do that anymore. Chris says he's not available. I'm frustrated. I'm sorry. I just dumped on you, Janice. I feel like I just did the emotional dump truck on you, but what can you do to help me?
Well, that's okay. That's okay. You can vent. You can, I'm here to listen. So,
thank God, please.
Well, like I said, I can't do everything, but what I don't know, I can refer you to someone who can assist you, hopefully. So far as your mom, you're saying that, so let me ask you something. Is she mobile? What is she able to do on her own?
Well, she is mobile, but I have to watch her all the time because she is getting weaker and weaker. And, you know, she is very unsteady on her feet. And now she's to the point, she doesn't even know how to use a rollator. She can't use a cane. She can't use a rollator. She needs cueing for sitting down in the chair. Even she doesn't. Okay. She doesn't know how to use these things anymore.
Okay. So, but she is able to walk. She's just unsteady on her feet and can't. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you may need to get to the point of using a wheelchair or something to assist her if she can't walk steady on her feet. But let me ask you something. Have you educated yourself about the disease so that you understand her behavior, communication issues, what to expect?
Well, I guess I did somewhat in the beginning, but when I read through all that, I was like, oh, no, this can't really be the right diagnosis for mom. This isn't her, so I don't know. I mean, yeah, I educated myself some on it, but then I was like, no, I guess I was in a bit of denial.
Yeah, so that, yeah, I was going to say, the more you educate yourself, the better you can understand what's going on with her and how to cope with it.
Well,
I'm so overwhelmed, I'm like, I don't even want to take time to sit down and read it because there's so much I'm dealing with.
Well, I think Audrey's overreacting. I mean, mom forgets things sometimes. But, you know, I mean, it's not that big a deal. I mean, I don't think she needs to look
all the time. Do you see her at 6 o'clock at night when she's got sundowners?
Well, I talked to her in the morning and she seems fine.
Well, that's morning time. I can't wait till you come and have dinner with us sometime.
And cut. Okay, these are people who have seen this. These are real conversations that happen, and this was a brief conversation. But this is a reality for caregivers. And one of the things that Audrey mentioned to us during the break is, you know, caregiving is not just for elderly people. There was an article in the Washington Post that talked about an increase in people 15 to 40 years of age diagnosed with cancer. So we've kind of focused somewhat on elderly because that tends to be what maybe is more the norm, but the norm is shifting some. And so what do you do when the caregiver also has toddlers and school-age kids and is working full time? Those are really significant things that caregivers have to balance. So I want to ask. I'll start with you, Janice. What do you think the most difficult part of being a caregiver is from your experience?
Wow, that's a fully loaded question. I would say I don't know if that's the most. I think one of the it just depends on the caregiver.
Right.
For some caregivers, it's hard for them to let go and allow someone else to provide the care. For some caregivers, they don't want to accept. Accepting the diagnosis can be the hardest thing because it was like, once I do that, then I know my life is going to change.
Right.
Then I have to do something about it. And so if I stand in denial, I can act like it doesn't exist or didn't happen.
So denial, yeah. You're kind of in that denial phase because.
Yeah,
because
a lot of parents, because I hear them say sometimes the main caregiver is dealing with it, but then you have other siblings, as we shared, they're in denial, so they don't come on board to help. Because I think sometimes they feel, I tell them, just because it's not going to go away just because you're in denial. So you have to face it, and they need the support. Mm-hmm. So, and I would say one of the hardest things I feel is not having that family support that they need and sources to help support them in their journey.
Okay. If Audrey didn't have that dirty dog brother that's not helping out. Well, and it goes back to like what Janice was saying, it's guilt. I can't be there all the time to do what mom needs.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's guilt about, they feel selfish because their life is changing. Exactly. And so many of our caregivers are in that sandwich generation that we call it, that 45 to 65, usually female caregivers. Mm-hmm. And they may have children at home. Mm-hmm. They may have grandchildren at home increasingly. Mm-hmm. And now they're taking care of mom or dad. And I had a client not too long ago that she didn't have a great relationship with her dad. It was a very strained relationship growing up. And her mom was gone, and it was just her and dad. And she's like, you know, I feel guilty because I don't really like him.
Right.
But I'm all he's got.
Yeah.
And I feel guilty about that, but he is my dad, and I want to honor him, even though he was not a great father. You know, so they have guilt from that too. So there's dealing with the guilt. I think a support group, we've talked about several of those. Alzheimer's of Central Alabama especially has great support groups. But knowing that you're not alone, you're not the only one going through this is crucial. And having that community around you to help you because it is overwhelming some days for many reasons.
Hey, Audrey, I want to talk about what you brought up with me earlier, which is how can friends help someone who is a caregiver? In other words, I know somebody and they're sitting all day long with their father who has dementia. I know that after my husband died, people would say, what can I do? And it was like, I don't know. I'm grieving here. But talk about some of the practical things that you've seen that are helpful to caregivers. What can people do to give them support outside of these agencies and resources that we've talked about thus far?
So I think it's just being really practical. And instead of giving, say, you are the caregiver, instead of me coming to you and say, oh, well, Stacia, let me know if I can do something for you. Well, most likely you're not going to get back to me and say, oh, could you go do this or this? You're very overwhelmed, and it may be very hard for you to ask for help. But I think instead it's really good if this friend can come in, if I could come to you and say, hey, Stacia, I would like to bring you dinner tomorrow night. Could I do that for you? And I just want to let you know you have the freedom to say, yes, stay and eat with me, or don't stay. So you just have the freedom to say that. Stacia, on Thursday, I'm going to the grocery store. Let me know if I can pick up groceries for you. I'd love to save you the extra cost of paying for Instacart. So please just give me your list, or I'm going to Costco. Give me your list for that. Hey, Stacia, have you been able to get out just to go get your nails done recently? Would it be okay if I just stay and sit with your mom for a couple hours? Just tell me what to do, and I just want to give you a break so you can go out.
I think those are so awesome. Yeah. So if you're someone who knows someone who is taking care of their loved one, don't just give the general, let me know if I can do anything for you. All right, I want to end today's session with a quick question, and we only have a little bit of time, so I'll ask each of our panelists to keep it to about a minute. What parting advice would you give to caretakers? If you could only tell them one thing or one or two things, what parting advice would you give? We'll start with you, Chris.
I guess the first thing would be to reach out to people that you trust, whether it's their doctor, an attorney, family lawyer, for resources. Don't wait until you're kind of knee deep in the caregiving crisis before you reach out for help, and ask around. That's the great thing about our area, about Birmingham, is everybody knows somebody.
Right.
And they go to church with them. They went to school with them, you know. So ask for help, and don't just try to sweep it under the rug. Everything's fine. But don't wait until it's overwhelming before you ask for help.
Janice?
I have two quick things. One, I would say to take time for yourself. Mm. You have to care for yourself before you can care for your loved one. Put that mask on first before mm-hmm. you can put their mask on, because if you don't, you're not going to be in shape to take care of them.
Mm. Right.
So put yourself first, which is hard for caregivers to do, but keep trying. Mm. And secondly, I would say, mainly take care of yourself is most important, because if you don't go to your own doctor's appointments, if you don't eat, take your medication, exercise, get rest, you're going to burn out before your loved one does.
Right. Good. Audrey?
Oftentimes when I go to leave the home, some of the last things I say to my caregivers, of course, when it's appropriate, and 99.9% of the time it is, you are doing a great job. I know this is very tough, what you are walking into, what you are walking through with your loved one, but you're doing a great job. And sometimes mm-hmm. them just hearing that, it's like, oh, I am, just for somebody else to tell them that. Then I say, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. No question is stupid. You are going through uncharted territory. You've not been through this before. And then the last thing we always say, and it's we, because we have a whole team between the nurse, the CNA, the chaplain, and the social worker. We say, please make sure you call us if you have any questions, concerns, or changes in status. We have our triage team here for you 24/7. It's an RN who will answer the phone and answer your questions, and if needed, we'll send a nurse out. There's always a nurse available to come for a visit. So I just want you to know we are always here for you, and you are doing a great job.
All right. Thank you, panelists. I've learned a lot today, and listeners, I hope you have too. And please go to survivalpodcast.com for a list of resources. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Survival, the podcast about befriending grief. My hope is that something you've learned today has piqued your interest and you can take a baby step in your own healing journey. I would love to hear from you, to send me a message, or even tell me your story. Go to survivalpodcast.com. If you'd like to book me as a speaker, you can also do that through the Contact Me section of my website. Please follow me and tell your friends.